The following podcast contains explicit language.
Welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Thursday, May 7th, the Cut It Yourself edition. I'm Jamila Lemieux, a writer, contributor to Slate's Care and Feeding Parenting column, noted millennial, according to the New York Times, and mom to Naima, who is 7, and we reside in Los Angeles, California. I was going to say New York because I forgot. That's how tired I am.
I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. I write the homeschool and family travel blog, Dutch Dutch Goose. I'm the mom to 3 boys, Henry 8, Oliver 5, and Teddy 3, and I'm located in Navarre, Florida.
Hey, I'm Dan Kois. I'm a writer at Slate and the author of the book, How to Be a Family. I'm the dad of Lyra, who's 15, Harper, who's 12, and we live in Arlington, Virginia.
This week, we're answering a listener question from a mom whose stepmom wants to be called grandma. And while the letter writer is happy her stepmother wants to be so involved, how should she explain to her kids that their quote-unquote grandmother is not her biological mom who passed away? For our All Ages, Everyone is Fighting Now segment, how are you taking care of your hair when your family can't go to the salon or the barber? Well, we're going to talk to someone who's figured out a way to make it work. Nijay Graham Henrys, who at 9 years old just might be the world's youngest female barber. She and her mom, Jamie, will be giving us tips on how to cut and manage your hair during quarantine. We'll have a timestamp in the show notes so families can find the segment. And as always, we'll have triumphs and fails and recommendations. Let's start with you, Elizabeth. Do you have a triumph or a fail for us this week?
So I have a gardening triumph, but a life fail. I unintentionally led a sex education class in my garden with my children. So as part of homeschool, we have like a garden. The kids asked if they could let a pumpkin from Halloween rot in the garden over the winter. I said, sure. Like thousands of little seedlets came up. I pruned a bunch of them. Now we have these 3 enormous pumpkin plants. Stuff has been growing here in Florida since like March. So the pumpkin plant has only been giving male flowers. And so, you know, the kids want a pumpkin. So I'm like Googling what to do. And it says you have to go out there and basically make the plant believe that it's being pollinated. So I've been out there with like a paintbrush, having the kids help me like swish on the male with a paintbrush on the male flower. Okay, we finally get a female flower, but there's no pollinators. So again, the children and I watch a video on what to do. And there's like a little, you know, in the bottom of the YouTube, like I print out exactly what to do. We go out there and my Henry, the 8-year-old, reads out loud as we do the following steps. So the female flowers must be pollinated early in the morning when they choose to open. So we go out there and we're like looking, there's one female flower. She chooses to open like around 10. Then you have to remove a few of the male flowers from their stems, then actually peel back the flower to show the little stamen. And then you have to rub the center of that against the female flower's center to transfer the pollen onto the female ovaries. Okay.
I worry this is too hot for radio.
Yeah. So my children, we all go there. We all get a male flower. We all peel it back. And do you know what it looks like in the center? It looks like a penis.
Yeah.
And all of my children are like, this looks like our penis. And I'm like, yes, yes, it does. And it carries the pollen and we are going to put this into the female flower. My kids, you know, grew up in the Netherlands. They had more sex education than a child here might get. But I'm not really sure that they ever covered, like they covered parts and they covered kind of generally how things work. But the actual action of how to insert like the male part into the female part was never covered. Well, we have now covered that because each of them needed to take a turn pollinating. And as this happens, I just completely lose track. I'm like, realize that I'm teaching the sex education class and then I become very uncomfortable because we like have all these lessons that I think should be attached to that. And they're like comparing this to their penis. Anyway, I end up kind of talking about consent with this flower and we're like all holding the male flowers and then we're all taking turns pollinating the same female flower. And then step 3 says, tie the female flower shut to ensure that hand pollination remains uncontaminated. So I think everyone left confused. I'm confused. We asked the flower for consent to give it a pumpkin.
It didn't give consent.
I mean, no, it did not speak to me. We pollinated it anyway. I will be untangling this for years to come, but I hopefully will be growing pumpkins. So, gardening success, life failure.
Those pumpkins will be the children of sin, Elizabeth.
Well, yes. I mean, the one flower was pollinated by at least three male flowers that we know of.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's anyone's guess.
All I can think about is, like, I just know Elizabeth is going to send me some pumpkin bread. I just know that's where this story ends. It might be 6 months down the line, but I'm getting pumpkin bread.
I will. I will. I'll send you some pumpkin bread, and you will know the pumpkin's origin story.
Yes, I'll feel very close to these pumpkins.
Yeah, exactly.
The sex pumpkins. That's wonderful. Dan, what did you fail at this week?
This week, I failed at nutrition. It was Lyra's birthday last week, and her two best friends did an extremely sweet thing, which is that they came over in the morning and stood at a faraway distance from Lyra in our backyard with a bucket of water balloons. And so they were, like, you know, in a triangle in our backyard, and they surprised Lyra, wished her happy birthday, and then did a water balloon quiz in which they asked Lyra questions, and then if she got them right, she got to hit them with water balloons. If she got them wrong, they got to hit her with water balloons. It was very charming. Lyra was delighted by it. At the end of it, they gave her her present, which was just a case of Dots that they got at Costco. You know, Dots, the movie theater candy that no one over the age of, I guess, 15 likes. But Lyra loves them. She really likes that truly terrible candy. Even though she has braces and is not actually even allowed to eat them, she loves Dots. And so we said, you know what? It's your birthday. You can have these Dots. It's fine. But, you know, you just need to be really careful. Please brush your teeth really well after you eat them. Please, you know, don't eat a lot at once. Ration them out. Make it last. That was last Wednesday on her birthday. And on Sunday, we found in the garbage can in Lyra's room all 24 boxes of Tots because she'd eaten all 24 of them.
Oh my God.
In 5 days.
No. She'll never eat one again, though. This is good.
I was going to say, it's over.
I mean, it's remarkable to me that her jaws even can open, that they're not glued shut by Dots.
Or just like the pain after you're chewing something like that for so long.
And I thought this would be like, you're going to smoke a cigarette. I'm going to make you smoke a whole pack of cigarettes situation. But it wasn't like that at all. She would eat 24 more boxes of Dots right now if we got them for her. Like,
really?
Happily. She has suffered no ill effects whatsoever. She's completely happy. And she and I guess this is great that she didn't even have any shame about it. She didn't try to hide the evidence. She just put it all right in her garbage can. And then when we saw it, we were like, what the, you ate all of those? She goes, oh yeah, they were great.
So
all her birthday dreams came true.
They really did. They really did.
Every time I've binged on any food like that, it's been the end of me and that food, at the very least for a long time. Like, we definitely ate at least 80 to 100 half ounce bags of Pirate's Booty in the first month of the quarantine. Like, mm-hmm. We were responsible for it not being in stock in place. Like, we got a box of like 32 of the little tiny, you know, they have the 1 ounce bags. So we went through a bunch of those, and then we got the half ounce bags. Like, I got like a 32 box of the half ounce bags, and like, I didn't even tell Naima they were here for a long time. Like, I don't know they'll ever eat Pirate's Booty again. And so the Lyra could still eat Dots. I can't even eat Dots after hearing that. Aside from being over.
All right. I'll never touch them again.
Aside from being over 15. What's funny is that when you were talking, I was thinking, you know, Lyra is my favorite. And there's an old Black tradition of having an auntie who is better equipped to take care of your kids, like take your kid. So you let Lyra's friends throw coronavirus water balloons at her, and she ate 24 boxes of Dots. So I think the Gimme a Break reboot is going to be you sending Lyra to Inglewood for a few months so I can protect her until it's safe for her to return to school.
She'll just overdose on Pirate's Booty at your house.
She will. And we.
Right. At least the Dots in our house are not laced with anything.
My house is childproof. It's not teenager proof. Because there's things that kids can't access that teenagers very quickly, their little spidey senses will be like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Jamila, what about you? Triumph or fail this week?
This week, I have a fail, as always. In great part because there was a car that I had my eye on and it slipped through my fingers. I'd sent an inquiry to the dealer and it was available and I kind of hesitated and they were doing online delivery, but I'm just like, is this how I'm going to have to buy a car? Like, I'm trying to wait, but then I'm also like, you very easily could like waste the money you saved for a car on Pirate's Booty if you don't like buy one now. Like, I would feel better having a car, you know? And also, what if I do spend my car money on Pirate's Booty? And so the car slipped through my fingers. So if there are any sponsors that are out there like, man, I've really been trying to figure out a way to make a car commercial work for mom and dad are fighting. I'm going rogue. Nobody at Slate.com has approved this, but I, me, myself, Jamila, know people here. And I could ask them if you could have your car commercial. And all you have to do is pay for the car commercial ad space and also give me a car perhaps. So just something to think about. But I really liked this car and I'm bummed out about it.
Do you think the lesson is like, don't hesitate? Next time, are you just going to get the car?
I don't know.
Or are you still going to be worried and nervous about it?
I'm still going to be worried and nervous because another one that was like similar and similar price bracket like went like a week later. And so I was like, wow, it happened to me again. So this is probably going to keep happening. But the other one I'd watch for a while.
But like you kind of need a car now more than you did before, right? Because I mean, like your options for you to feel safe to get out and as things relax are less.
Yeah, no, I definitely don't want to have to like Uber. I mean, I could say I'm going to just take a day and go to it. You know what I mean? Like identify a few cars that I wanted to see. And this is just a day I go out and see cars. But I think I am going to end up probably having to get something sent here unless I manage to just wait until never.
or I just don't get a car. Yeah, I mean, the two options here are get a car or don't get a car.
Yeah, like Naima's dad had to take me to CVS. He didn't have to, but I asked him to take me to CVS the other day to pick up prescriptions. I had to go into a brick and mortar store. That was going to be my fail because I was just like, man, but I was like, well, I didn't have a choice. Like they wouldn't deliver the prescriptions that they had to pick up myself.
Jamila.
Yeah.
Buy a car.
Okay.
I agree. It's going to be okay.
This week, buy a car.
Okay, I'm going to try really hard.
It's going to have a warranty or something. Like you're not going to be stuck with something.
I know. It's just so like.
And once you get used to the car, it'll be your car and it'll be fine.
I know.
You can do it.
I can do it. I just want to really like
I'm getting real vibes of an age old Mom and Dad Are Fighting episode where Allison's fail was about how she just hated opening the mail. She hated opening the mail so much. And so did her husband, John. And so they would just let the mail pile up for like months on their table. And so like they learned that they like missed their child's graduation ceremony. And you know, it's all this shit happened to them. And the solution was so obvious, which was just open the mail. And I inspired her on the show by yelling at her to just open the mail for I think like even a month. It made her life so much better before she fell back. But if I can inspire you, Jamila, to just buy the car, I'll have really accomplished something this week.
Okay. I will buy the car within a fortnight.
All right. When it goes bad, it's not my fault.
Just send us a picture of what you're buying and we'll cheer you on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe, Dan, can you help me buy it on Zoom?
Like, yeah!
Because the whole point was that I needed...
Bring Dan on Zoom!
Because this is actually a great idea because the whole
part... This is such a good idea!
Because my plan all along was to bring a guy with me. You know, like, I went to one dealership to check some stuff out because I was thinking... At that time, I had a different make and model in mind. And I was like, okay, I'm going to test drive it, but I'm probably not going to buy it from there. But let me just... And so I turned into such a television stereotype of a woman at a car dealership. Like, the only thing I could come up with just, like, pure aggression. Like, you can't play me. But, like, I just sounded like a person who knew nothing after months and months of research. I just turn into so it's got 1, 2, 3, 4 wheels. Okay, this is nice. You know, like it was so bad. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to definitely bring a guy with me because I just like the idea of being taken advantage of by a used car dealer is just so deeply ingrained in my head from every 80s and 90s sitcom ever. That was just such a thing. Used car dealers, right? It's just in my head. Like they are there to take advantage of you. That's the only thing they know how to do. They're going to mess you up somehow if you don't have some help. So if I could zoom in, not just any man, but a white man?
I would be happy to, but the thing I will warn you is that I also, in car buying experiences, revert to the stereotype of a woman
at the
car dealership.
You did in the book. I forgot about that. You totally fought that in the book.
You read apart. A whole book about how bad I have at buying cars.
You completely fell apart.
Okay, Jamila, I volunteer my husband. We bought our van used, and he walked out of the dealership and the dealership had to pay to find his phone number to call him back to offer us a lower price because he walked out after, I think, doing some of the paperwork and then just deciding, yeah, you know, I should get this lower. So I'm totally serious.
I mean, he's also like an aerospace engineer.
Yeah, so he has, you know, he believes that he's right a lot. So he's the guy for you. We're going to get you a car.
It's great.
I'm serious. Yes. We'll report back. Yeah.
I'll pick out the car and just send you a link. And he can, like, if he would be willing to do this, it would be so great. Like, he could just send the email and make the inquiry and, like, talk to them. And once they've agreed on a price, he's like, okay, my business manager, Jamila, is going to take care of all the details. And I'm the business manager, Jamila.
No, he'll probably say, I work for her. My boss is going to come pick it up.
I like this.
I'm serious, though. Well, let's talk offline. We're going to get you a car.
I love this.
I cannot wait for the update on this.
It's going to be both of our triumphs.
This will be the biggest triumph.
I mean, it won't be mine, other than volunteering him.
I appreciate how you keep your family engaged. Like, last week, you had your little one called Lynn, and then you were like, hey, is that my child? This is great.
That was also Jeff, I think. But yes, like I said, I'm totally serious. Let's do this.
I am with it. This is great.
I can't wait. I endorse this.
Let's move on to some business and then wrap up this whole podcast thing so I can get my car. Slate's parenting newsletter is the best place to be notified about all of our parenting content, including Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Care and Feeding, and much more. Sign up at slate.com/parenting email. Also, check us out on Facebook. Just search for Slate Parenting. It's a really fun, very active, very supportive community, at least of me. Thank you. Plus, we moderate it so it doesn't get out of control. It's a safe space as long as you're nice. And we also have a new weekly Care and Feeding live show with Nicole Cliff. It's on Slate's Facebook page every Tuesday live at 11 Eastern time. If you want to go watch past episodes, you can find them on Slate's YouTube page.
I'm going to interrupt here briefly and just say that this show is hilarious and great. And Nicole is a natural at the weird art of being on video and just talking nonstop and never not being entertaining. I watched this week's episode and it was great. Check it out. We'll also post it not only on the Slate Facebook page, but on the Slate Parenting Facebook page.
In Slate Plus today, The Waves co-host Marsha Chatelain will be joining us to talk about the pandemic's impact on adoption, fostering, and surrogacy. Here's a quick sneak peek of what you'll hear if you have Slate Plus.
Those are those like bureaucratic moments that make you feel so overwhelmed. You're like, God, how can I have a kid when I can barely like notarize a document properly? But I think those are the things that are the unexciting part of it, but also is a lot of this process. And so this is the time to kind of learn how to do those things.
To hear segments like that and to get ad-free podcasts, sign up for Slate Plus. It's just $35 for your first year. And as you may know, a lot of media companies are struggling right now, and Slate is no exception. So now more than ever, we'd really appreciate the direct support of all the great content that Slate puts out. And besides ad-free podcasts, Slate Plus members won't hit a paywall on the site, so you can enjoy all Slate's journalism without worrying if you've reached your article limit. If you'd like to support Mom and Dad Are Fighting, we'd really appreciate it. Go to slate.com/momanddadplus and join Slate Plus today.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame, so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's skylightcal.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
Okay, on to this week's listener question. And as always, it's being read by the incomparable Sasha Leonard.
Dear Mom and Dad, 8 years ago, my mother passed away from cancer. 8 months ago, I gave birth to twin baby girls. My dad and stepmother were very excited to be grandparents. We had conversations about what they would like to be called, you know, grandma or nana, grandpa or pop, etc. When having this conversation with my dad, my stepmother chimed in and said she would like to be grandma. I am happy for my stepmother to play a big part in my daughter's lives, to be a grandmother to them. But it got me thinking about how to explain to my girls that their grandma is not my mom. How do I explain to them about my mother without overloading them with the concept of death at a too young age? I don't want to forget her or erase her from history, and I don't want to pretend to them that my stepmother is my mother. I know it's a long way off, but how do I have this conversation with them, and when? What's in a name?
Dan, what do you think?
I think you are worrying way too much about this. It is going to be okay, and here's why. From day one, you will call your stepmother grandma when you talk about her to your daughters. As soon as they can talk, they will call their grandmother, which is what she truly is, grandma. And at some point well down the line, they will just basically have absorbed that this is the relationship between all of these people, and it will be completely natural. And then also at some point down the line, maybe when they're three, maybe when they're four, you will mention for what seems to you at the moment like the first time, oh, you know, your grandmother is my father's wife. Unfortunately, my mother died before you were born, but she loves you so much, and she's a part of our family just the same as everyone else. And you will discover that, in fact, that information has always been encoded into the structure of your family. I think that you're putting a lot of focus on there's going to be a moment of revelation in which your daughters receive this information with the same kind of shock and sadness with which you are still processing it, understandably so. But to them, it is just going to be another piece of information about the way that your family works and has always worked, and the relationships they have with people who are here and who aren't here, and that they've always had with people who are here and who aren't here. People have this conversation about death with their kids all the time. I think it's always very, very fraught and worrisome for parents. But I think the first version of this conversation with the kids is almost always much smoother and much easier than parents are worried it's going to be. You convey this information. You don't have to go into great specifics about it, but you simply tell them what the situation is, and they're going to be so young that it's not going to be scarring or upsetting. It is instead going to just be another piece of information about the world that they take in and process. But do you guys think that I am underestimating how difficult these twins might eventually find this conversation to be?
I don't disagree that the conversation is not difficult, because like you, I think it comes up naturally. Like, even when everyone's alive and you have, you know, two sets of married grandparents, what happens is that kids ask, like, well, who is grandpa again? Or who is Opa? And you're like, oh, well, Opa is your dad's dad. And I think that in that conversation, it's very easy to say, you know, grandma is married to my father.
Right.
My mother has passed away. We made our children what we called their baby Facebooks, and we just printed photo books with pictures of all the people that we felt like we would want them to see their faces. And I think that something like this is a great opportunity to include a photo of your mother and to be able to say, this is grandma, or whatever you decide to call your mom, and also include a picture of your father and his new wife and be able to say, this is whatever you're calling them. I do, however, think that thinking about what to call your stepmom can be very upsetting to you. And I think it is okay to feel like I don't want her to be called grandma. And I can't tell from the letter if that is the situation or you're okay calling her grandma, but you're more upset about like how to place your mom. But I think that it sounds like you have a whole bunch of people who love you and love your children. And if the situation is one in which you are uncomfortable with her being grandma, what I would do is ask the stepmom's advice. And I would go to her and I would say, I want to find a way to honor my mom with the kids, and I would like you to help me do that. Because I think that brings her in on the conversation. She wants that too. She is not attempting to take the place of your mom. And I think bringing her in to come up with a solution, that could be that, you know, they're both grandma and you're doing the Facebook thing and you're talking about them. It could be that you make them grandma first name. So there's grandma who's your mom and then, you know, grandma Pat or whatever. She may have another solution to that. If it is a issue that you don't feel comfortable with it, that is an okay way to feel. And that if you have a conversation about it in a way that is like, I want to solve this so that my kids feel loved and I feel loved and we're honoring her memory. I also think you should keep in mind that there is a chance that your children will choose to call these people something that you never thought to call them. We have definitely had that happen. One of my children called my dad Grumpy for the longest time. He is not a grumpy man, but that is what they decided to call him. And, you know, my youngest also called both parents grandma for a long time. Like, no matter who you were grandma. Sometimes you don't get to make those choices. But there are ways to incorporate your mom. And I think, Dan, like you said, the talking about her will be so natural. There are photos of her. There are things of her. But I also think it's okay to say, like, this name is reserved and it hurts me to have this other person called grandma and to figure out a solution to that. I don't know. Jamila, what do you think?
I think that that's great advice from both of you. And I love the idea of bringing in the stepmother, you know, taking her consult on what's the best way to proceed. I think it is allowing her to do the work of a grandmother in that moment. And that's important that you're able to connect with her as she does grandmotherly deeds, because she is going to be the person who's performing the role of grandmother in the earthly sense. But it'll be through your stories of your mother, through those photo projects, that she lives in the minds of your children as your mother. So they won't experience her as a grandmother, unfortunately, but they will come to know of her as someone who cared for you. And they will come to understand, hopefully, who she was through her influence on you, the stories she told, the perfume that she wore, the places that you all went together, right? That is going to establish her identity and their connection to her, the things they have in common with her, you know, like maybe they have the same eyes, or they like wearing, you know, a similar type of lipstick, or any number of things that can connect them to this person. And it's okay. It's really great that your father has someone to care for, and that, you know, your children have someone to play the grandmotherly role. You know, as somebody who lost some of my grandparents pretty early in life, and I see my daughter who's 7 interacting with my mother and her father's mother and her step-grandmother from her stepmother, you know, I just hope that she gets to have that experience as long as possible, because so many, you know, kids don't have grandparents at all or completely disconnected for them. So I'm sorry that your mother is not there physically to be a part of this process in this way, but it sounds like you've got a really beautiful situation with somebody who's able to be a surrogate in many ways. And as long as you're open with her about any discomfort or, you know, awkwardness that you're feeling, I think you all can take it on together. Thank you so much, letter writer. We appreciate you. And, you know, we're always happy to have an update. So stay in touch and let us know how this works out. Other listeners, if you want to have us consider one of your questions on air, please help us help you by sending your conundrums to momanddad@slate.com.
Hey, Care and Feeding listeners, it's me, Lucy Lopez. What do ASMR, AI chatbots, and diet culture all have in common? They are all topics explored on Embodied, the Ambie Award-winning weekly podcast from WUNC, North Carolina Public Radio. Each week, acclaimed reporter Anita Rao holds up her journalistic lens to all kinds of things that are sometimes hard to talk about, like sex, health, and relationships. Embodied dives into what some considered taboo to answer important questions about our bodies and our society. Nothing's off limits. Hear from expert guests, including doctors, historians, and psychologists, as they break down everything from the dynamics of egg donation, how couples combat mental health struggles like schizophrenia and OCD, and the profits and pitfalls of the self-care industry. If you need a place to start, I highly recommend checking out the recent episode where Anita interviewed two couples who continued to choose each other after one partner came out as trans. So go ahead, follow Embodied and get new episodes every Friday wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, now it's time for our all ages segment. Everyone is fighting now. So if there's been one minor thing that pretty much anyone can bond over during the pandemic, it's the lack of access to the things we usually do to keep ourselves up aesthetically. People are letting their roots show. Professionally done nails have either come off or gotten chipped. I have gel polish left on two toes because I ran out of nail polish remover while I was trying to take it off and I can't get it shipped to my house. So I just have to let it come off on its own. It's terrible. Perhaps most commonly, people are talking about how long their hair has gotten. Some of us are just toughing it out while others have decided to chop it themselves. Elizabeth, you almost had a self-haircut situation in your household last week. Tell us about it.
Yes, my three-year-old got a hold of the haircutting stuff that was left out on the counter. And luckily, one of the other children alerted me. So I came in and he was holding all of the haircut stuff. And I lost my mind on him. It does turn out that Jeff had cut his hair. So the hair that I had found on the ground leading to the believing that it was him. But I mean, the situation could have been so much worse.
It definitely could have gone down much, much worse. So while most of us parents would be pretty nervous about letting our kids cut their hair, let alone anyone else's, today we are joined by Miss Nijay Graham Henrys, who is 9 years old and is the world's youngest female barber, apparently, as well as her mother, Jamie Graham. Welcome to the show, Nijay and Jamie.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Can you tell us about how you got interested in, is it called barbery or barbering?
Barbering.
Barbering?
Yeah.
Okay. Tell us how you got started.
Okay. I wanted to be a barber to make money.
Of course. Yes. That makes sense.
My brother, he was at a barber orientation and he didn't want to do it. So my mom showed me some pictures on IG, aka Instagram. And I asked if I can do it, and she said, yeah.
That's awesome. So what did you have to gather to get started? Did you get like a book? Did you learn on YouTube? Like, how did you learn how to cut hair?
From an instructor, the academy, Junior Barber Academy.
Oh, so you went to the Barber Academy instead of your brother?
Instead of him.
Wow. And I take it, were you the youngest person in the class?
Yes.
How often did you have to go to class?
About every Saturdays.
Every Saturday. That's a very impressive commitment. I don't even want to share you. I want to just talk to you all day long. But I'm going to allow my co-host to also ask some questions about your barbering work.
Nijay, I have three little boys plus my husband who all need their hair cut. And I'm not very good at that. Do you have any advice for me? So my husband's in the Air Force, so we do a buzz cut. And my boys just have wild hair now. So how can I get started? Like when I can't take them right now to the haircut place, what can I do here at home?
You could watch a video.
I should go to YouTube. Is that my best bet? Yeah.
Or maybe just like schedule an appointment with an instructor that can help you with a Skype, or just try to do it yourself the best you can.
Okay. So when I'm trying to do it and I use the guards on the clippers, right? If I want to do kind of like a fade, I feel like that is what they all usually get. So am I going to use like a shorter one on the back?
A two guard.
A two guard on the back. And then what am I using on the top?
Well, you normally don't really want to do the top or we'll get messed up more.
That would explain a lot of the problem I'm having. Okay, so a two on the back, kind of leave the top. Around the ears, do you have any tips? I'm so worried about cutting their ears. And you know, you never want your barber to be nervous. So
fold back the ear.
Okay, so fold back the ear and run the two kind of around it.
Also a one.
Oh, or okay.
So basically in the back, so the first one you use is, well, to me, you use a one and then a two for the middle and then a three And then for the bottom part, you use a zero and then just flick it.
Oh, okay.
Always keep a comb in your hand.
And keep the comb in my hand. Okay. To keep the hair kind of down, is that the...
Well, to just get like the extra parts that you like didn't get, or it won't look even. Gotcha.
This is very helpful because I feel like I thought I was supposed to just run one kind of all the way around and achieve that like fade. But you're saying I should use the different guards and get a nice faded look on the back.
Yeah, just go layers, like one like at a time. One, two, three. One in the first, the two in the middle, and the three for the last part, and then the last part, you use a zero and you just flick it around.
And get a nice little line there, a nice like tidy edge.
Yeah.
So Nijay, hi, my name is Dan and I have a question for you. I know that before the coronavirus, you were cutting the hair of a lot of adults in your community because you do free haircuts in your community in Philadelphia. I'm really curious if now that you are stuck in your home, if you have been cutting the hair of any people in your home, either your mom, Jamie, is she cutting your hair, or anyone else in your house?
No.
Sounds like you're not happy about that, Nijay.
Well, I might just, listen, with everything that's going on, I might just give her an opportunity to shave all of my hair, and I might just go bald and start from scratch. But Nijay did have an opportunity to cut her grandfather's hair this past Sunday. So that was quite interesting. And we're hoping that within the next couple of days that my son and, you know, Nijay's brother will allow her to cut his hair. He's 18, so you know how 18-year-olds can be.
Nijay, do you ever feel nervous when you're cutting adults' hair? I think a lot of people who are listening who are kids who want to cut adults' hair might be sort of nervous about, well, what do I do with this big person's head that's in front of me?
No.
How do you get over that nervousness?
I never get nervous.
Perfect. Why? Is it because you know what to do?
Yeah.
I love it. I think the worry that some kids have is that they don't know what to do and they're worried they'll make a mistake. Have you ever made a mistake while you have been cutting someone's hair?
To be honest, yes.
So what do you do when you make a mistake?
Ask Mr. Boom to fix
it. Your instructor?
Yeah.
I think one thing that I sometimes do if I make a mistake and I think it's not that big of a mistake is I'll just maybe tell the person, oh, you can hardly see it. Have you ever done that?
No, I mean,
you're too honest.
To me, it's not a big deal. I mean, it's just a haircut. So,
yes, that is exactly what I'm thinking.
That's a great attitude to have. I think more of us should have that attitude.
I mean, especially now, right? It's just hair.
It'll grow back, right?
Yeah.
What do you like about being a barber?
Doing like the shape up and the fade.
Nijay, can I ask you a question? In what you've practiced, have you only practiced cutting men's hair?
No, I have cut a female before.
How did that go and how was it different?
Well, it wasn't really different. It was the same thing because she had the same like textured hair. Well, not texture, but like she say, had the same species of men's hair.
Mm-hmm.
So I did mohawk for the first time.
Oh, that's so cool. What did you learn about doing a mohawk? Because I think that's going to be a very popular hairstyle for kids to do right now.
Well, I just have to fade the sides and then this like that part in the middle will be there.
Did she seem happy with her mohawk when it was over?
Yeah, but I expected it to be like curly, but it wasn't. Her hair was not curly. So to me, yeah.
Jamie, I have a question for you. You seem like such an amazing mom, like encouraging her to pursue something she was super interested in or even just expressed mm-hmm. a little bit of interest. Do you have advice for other parents who like their kids take an interest in haircutting, like how to get them started in that?
Absolutely. I think it's so important to kind of really study your children and see what they're drawn to. And to also, if you can, expose them to different things just to kind of see where their mind goes and then kind of nurture that. Because if you don't, you're going to wind up pretty much having to struggle with your child. And that's not something you want to do. Like, it, so I've learned a lot in this process with my son. Normally I would have said, listen, no, you're going to do this. But for some reason I just said, no, okay, you don't want to do it. That's fine. And I was looking at pictures from the barber orientation on Instagram, and Nijay, I showed her the pictures because she was drawn to the pictures because her brother was in them. You know, that opened up dialogue. And, you know, actually when I signed her up, I didn't even tell the instructor how old Nijay was because I didn't want to kind of put that barrier there. So we just showed up, you know.
I love that so much.
Yeah, study your children. See what they're not going to like everything, but at least if you can kind of expose them to different things, I'm sure there's something that they'll like.
I think it's so wonderful to be able to nurture that and that you were open to her like interests, because I think, you know, a lot of times we think like, oh, you're too little or you don't understand or this. So I just love that you signed her up and you opened those doors for her.
Right. Because my thing is this. Okay, she was 7 at the time. Of course, she's not going to take it all in. I mean, we just can't expect that. You know, most trained barbers, they're still, you know, in the process of learning. But just having her in certain environments has really benefited her, because all of the information that she's taking in goes into her subconscious. So, you know, at some point she'll be able to pull on that information, even if she's not able to apply it now, she'll be able to apply it later on in her, you know, development. And not only that, this particular industry has helped her in her personal life as well, because with barbering, you have to focus, you know, you have to start what you finish. You can't start a haircut and not complete it.
Nijay, I have one last question for you.
Okay.
Let's say that my daughter, who is only a little bit older than you, wants to cut my hair. I also have a buzz cut. Can you just sort of tell me step by step, how should she start? Where should I sit? What should I have on my shoulders? How would you do that if you were cutting a grown-up's hair in your house?
Well, it depends what kind of hair it is, first of all. Mm-hmm. So what would your daughter be giving you exactly?
She'd be giving me basically a buzz cut in my kitchen. What tools would she need, and what would be the first thing that she would do?
Okay, first off, you need like a couple of supplies. The first supplies, you need clippers, of course. You also need a cape and what is it called? Also a neck strip. So the neck strip is basically for your neck, so like you won't get like hair splinters.
What could you use for that if you don't have like a real barber's neck strip, like a piece of paper?
A paper towel. If you didn't have a cape, you would like use a blanket maybe or something like that.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Or maybe a towel.
Okay, so she puts those on me.
And you also need a comb.
And then you have the comb in one hand.
Yeah. Whatever hand you write with, you put the clippers in that hand and you put the comb in the other hand. So I'm basically okay. Right-handed, and I use my right hand, and I put the clippers on my right hand, and I use the comb for my left hand, and you do okay. The opposite if you're left-handed. And you want the hair to be clean in the clippers, and you need, like, a certain spray.
What does the clean in the clippers mean?
Clipper side, yeah. If the comb drops, you need this, like, blue tank, and you put the comb in it, and then if you have another comb in there, you pick that out and just wipe it a little bit on the towel and you use that one.
What if you don't have that in your house? Could you do that with water?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Hot soapy water.
And soap. Okay.
You are a treasure. Thank you so much, Nijay, for coming on the show. Thank you, Jamie. Like, wow. I'm inspired.
Also a treasure.
Also a treasure. And I don't
Thank
know
you.
How my co-host, but my kid is getting a job tonight when she comes home.
Thank you guys so much.
Well, the show isn't over yet. It's time for recommendations. Dan, what do you have for us this week?
This week, I am recommending a Slate piece, a Slate cover story, which ran this week on Tuesday. It was collected by Laura Bennett, who is, I mean, technically she's my boss, but it's okay. I'm not just brown nosing. It's a really great story, which I think that any parent of a college student or of someone who is soon to be in college should read. It's called Zoom Pranks on Professors, Wild PowerPoint Parties, and a Billion Memes. We asked students all around the country how they're recreating campus life from afar. And it's just a collection of stories from from students at a bunch of different colleges around the country, one at Spelman, one at NYU, one at Arizona State, one at Michigan State, just about what college life has been like in this crazy, misbegotten spring semester of 2020, and how they have managed to sort of create for themselves the fun and love and mischief of the college experience, even though it's a shit show, even though they have to do their classes on Zoom, even though they can't be in their dorms, because kids are amazing and because kids find a way, they have still managed to create a memorable and great college experience for themselves. And I just found this article so heartening and found the voices of these kids so engaging and fun and just loved seeing the crazy shit that they're coming up with, and just made me feel so much better about how people can really make this time, which seems so hard, still seem great in a lot of ways. And I love this piece. So we'll put a link on the show page.
Great one, Dan. What about you, Elizabeth?
I'm recommending an activity and sort of service project that you can do as a family. And this is sending cards to senior centers. We did do our research, and the CDC, World Health Organization, and the Surgeon General have all indicated that there is currently no evidence that the COVID-19 is being spread through the mail. So you can send in your cards and not worry about making anyone unhealthy, so that they can just receive the love without any of the germs. We started by just using our neighborhood group to find out who had people that maybe needed cards, and making art as a family. And then Jeff and I, and also our 8-year-old, writing little letters and sending them. For the past few weeks, we've been doing this now through a charity called Love for the Elderly. And you can make a bunch of cards, and then they are sending the packets to nursing homes that are affected or have people in lockdown. We've heard back from a couple of the people there, which is super fun, sending us letters and just hearing from the staff too that they're hanging them up. And it's just a fun way. We've been doing it on Sunday, just together as a family, like I said, painting the cards, using arts and crafts, like even the 3-year-old draws on the front of the cards, and then we take the time during the week to write the letters. But it's a really nice way, especially if you're a family that got out and was doing service and now you feel like there's not a lot of opportunities for that. This has been a fun little way for us to try to brighten someone else's day.
And that's a great idea. That's super beautiful, Elizabeth. I love that. And I think a lot of us have been trying to think of ways to be helpful and supportive of other people while not being able to get out and do that sort of stuff face to face. So I love that. All right. Well, I'm recommending I Don't Want to Die Poor. It's a new book of essays from the New York Times bestselling author, Michael Arsenault, who is a brilliant writer. He's a very, very funny guy. Michael's first book, I Don't Want to Date Jesus, is actually slated to become a television show that Michael is developing with Lee Daniels and Jared Carmichael. So happy and proud of his success, my Howard University Bison brother and friend. So please check that out. I Don't Want to Die Poor. Awesome, awesome book. I just started it, but I believe that it'll be awesome all the way through, just like Dan's book that I promised I was going to have a Facebook conversation about. But I was like, I just enjoyed it. I don't really know how to like lead a book discussion. I'm absolutely terrible at that, but I did enjoy it. So I'm also—
You're forgiven as you've plugged it thoroughly.
Okay, good. Thank you. I did my part. I just want to make sure Lyra has some nice things when she comes to stay with me. She's got, you know, nice sneakers and a backpack. So
plenty of dots.
Plenty of dots, right.
She's going to bring so many dots.
She's going to bring so many dots. Oh my gosh, she's going to get my daughter hooked
on
dots.
She's going to finish him on the plane, Dan. That's what we learned.
You're right.
She's gonna finish them on, and they're not gonna be able to give me food on the plane anymore. So she's gonna have to eat them on it. Like, they'll be like, I was just hungry.
That's it.
It was a 5-hour flight. They didn't feed us. So what was I to do?
And then you'll pick her up at the airport in your new car.
And I'll pick her up in my new car that Elizabeth's husband is gonna help me buy. All right. Thank you all so much for listening to Mom and Dad Are Fighting. God willing and the creek don't rise, we will be here next week. And as a reminder, if you have a question for us, shoot us an email, momanddad@slate.com, and join us on Facebook by searching for Slate Parenting and asking our permission. Mom and Dad Are Fighting is produced by Rosemary Belson. For Elizabeth Newcamp and Dan Kwa, I'm Jamila Lemieux.